Presentation on color theory by Studio Hub is broken into sections with questions and answers at the end of each session. If you have a question or comment, please use the put up your hand or the Q&A feature on Zoom. They're at the bottom. We encourage you to be concise, just to allow others the opportunity to speak. And for architects, this section is worth 1.5 learning units, core learning units. And we'll be sending a copy of the attendee list into AIBC. So if you're sharing a computer or whatever, you need to let us know. And we're looking at recording this. Actually, this session is being recorded, and we're looking at options for sending it out to the membership, either posting on the website or sending a link. Let's move to the next slide, Sarah. We acknowledge that we work and play on the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and other Coast Salish nations. And next slide. I also wanted to give a hearty thank you to our sponsors. We have 21 of them, consisting of consultants, contractors, suppliers, and they're both essential to improving learning environments and supporting your BC chapter to provide engaging and informative conferences and learning sessions. Please contact Lisa McIntosh if you would like to know how to become a sponsor. So the agenda today, Studio Hub is doing a presentation on color theory, and there will be little Q&A in between each session, and we are going to throw some poll questions at you as well. At the end, we'll go over some upcoming sessions and a little bit of a wind up. So over to you, Sarah.
Thanks, Carrie.
I forgot to do the introductions.
Oh, it's okay.
Well, let me quickly introduce our speakers. I don't know how I messed that up. Sarah Bjornsson is an architect, AIBC, partner at Studio Hub Architects, and the president of the Pacific Northwest region of A4LE. Her strengths in creative design, sensibility, her expert technical knowledge, and her ability to coordinate effective consultant teams while delivering projects on budget and on time. She has 18 years of experience and worked in Bingtom Architects and Dialogue. With Anrike van Hoek, she's an architect AIBC, also a partner of Studio Hub Architects. She's an exceptional listener with deep passion for educational design. She has valuable experience in design and construction of education spaces, from complicated renovations, coordinating large design build teams from competition through to design and construction. Alvin Martin is a senior architectural technologist, also with Studio Hub. He has over 25 years of experience with a broad range of building typologies through British Columbia. And they're going to share their thoughts and all their amazing research on color theory. Take it away, Sarah.
Okay, thank you. So we'll start first with a few poll questions, and then we'll delve into the kind of color theory and how it impacts how we learn, how we interact with one another, how we engage, and the physiological impacts of color on our educational spaces. So the first poll question is, what color draws the attention of kindergartners? So I believe there's an opportunity to respond to the actual poll question. You'll see it here. Red, orange, yellow, green, blue, purple, or other. So if everyone can kindly, who's participating today, check off one of those colors. Okay, without further ado, I'll go down to the next question. Oh, maybe I'm not allowed to. Do impacts of color change as you age? Yes, no, or I don't know. Next, third poll question. What color do you associate with high levels of activity? Red, orange, yellow, green, blue, purple, or other? And lastly, what color do you associate with creativity? Red, orange, yellow, green, blue, purple, or other? Okay, I never teach my pupils. I only attempt to provide the conditions in which they can learn. Quote Albert Einstein. As architects, how can we create nourishing environments where students thrive? So the first thing we just wanted to kind of draw attention to is historically, color was very personal. People would comment that that color sweater that you wear really complements your eyes, or everyone has heard the term builder's beige, which is supposed to be considered the most innocuous color appealing to the masses. And so for convenience, developers would, you know, color an entire subdivision beige, or often from a maintenance point of view, people may be looking at color with respect to ease of maintenance, and not necessarily appreciating the impact that color has on our learning environments. So today we wanted to kind of delve a little bit more into the color and 21st century learning principles, Reggio Emilia, biophilia, and then color in general. How does biophilia and color affect us? Why is this important in learning environments? So the first thing is to understand that color is actually a science. It has there's a physical aspect to color, and it actually has a physiological impact on the body. So cognitive functionality and performance, our ability to think, learn, and output either logically or creatively and apply direct attention for extended periods of time on repetitive tasks such as paperwork, reading, performing calculations, and or analysis is all impacted by color. We have a strong connection with nature, and its intentional use of color can provide opportunities for mental restoration as well as increase of capacity of which an individual is able to perform focused tasks and can aid in preventing fatigue of cognitive resources. So this is really critical when we're looking at introducing biophilia and color into our educational spaces. You'll see more and more architects and designers are trying to increase the amount of glazing and natural light and bringing in a connection to our outdoor environments. Now, this is important also to consider where you're located geographically. If you're up north, in which you have either reduced, you know, daylight, or if you have a lot less kind of color that's coming out from nature because you're blanketed in snow for half a year, then that is a consideration to take into context is your actual site location. Incorrect environmental conditions can contribute to irritability, premature fatigue, lack of interest, and behavioral problems. So color can increase attention levels on certain information, assist in information being transferred to short-term and long-term memories. And color can enhance the levels of concentration as well as degree of stimulation. Just to kind of give a little overview, we hear the term biophilia all the time, but not everyone necessarily kind of appreciates the specifics of biophilia. The concept of biophilia design takes into consideration that today's natural habitat is largely the built environment where we now spend 90% of our time. It focuses on bringing into the built environment the aspects of nature that have the ability to contribute to human health and well-being, happiness, and productivities. So, findings from recent studies suggest that enhancing the learning environment by considering color use and biophilic design, for example, increasing natural light, ventilation, use of natural material and pattern, and views to nature have shown in studies to increase learning and performance by up to 25%. A study from the University of Salford that focused on color, natural light, temperature, air quality, and individualized classroom design, meaning flexibility and ownership of that space, showed that the well-designed primary classrooms boosted children's learning progress in reading, writing, and math by up to 16% in a single year. Similarly, we found that numerous studies indicated that one specific study, 21,000 students showed that increasing natural light alone increased test scores by up to 25%. Lastly, I'll just skip over this because there is quite a bit. One study found that the use of students' more favored colors of light blue, yellow, yellow green, and orange could raise an IQ by as much as 12 points for over the use of white, black, brown, and other considers quote unquote ugly. So the physiological health and well-being, connections with nature encourage muscle relaxation, lowering the blood pressure and the heart rate, lowering of stress hormones, while certain colors have the adverse effect. So a lot of studies suggest that when a student, a child is in a stressful environment, there's actually endorphins and other cortisol fight or flight that is released into the system. And that actually retards the student's ability to learn because they're in a heightened state of anxiety. So on the flip side, if you encourage through the use of color by bringing in the biophilic design, such as introducing wood into our interior environments, that helps lower the blood pressure, which in turn helps the students be able to be in a kind of more comfortable state to actually learn. Different wavelengths of color cause different responses in our physiological systems, including blood pressure, heart rate, respiration, nervous systems, digestion, etc. Short-term stress from encountering an unknown or information-rich space, overlooking a railing to stories below, for example, which mimics a cliff in nature, is suggested to be beneficial to regulating physiological health. While each color can elicit a specific biological response, however, this is not a definitive science, as personal experience, trauma, what have you, can impact the interpretation of color. Lastly, what is color? So this is where the kind of physics and the science come into play. So it's not just something that's completely subjective. It actually has a physiological impact on our body. So color is a white light from the sun is made up of a mixture of colors, each with a different frequency. We see higher frequencies of light as blue or violet, lower frequencies of light as seen as red or orange. Green light is in the middle. Different colors have different wavelengths, which is the distance between corresponding parts of two of the waves. The longest wavelength of light that humans can see is red. The shortest is violet. The color of an object is determined by the wavelengths of the light that it reflects. So how does color actually affect us? Colors cause different physiological reactions in blood pressure, breathing, digestion, body temperature, and brain activity. How does color affect students? Colors affect the body functions, mind, and emotion with the energy produced by light. Studies conducted clearly demonstrate the benefits of color where the development of the brain, creativity, productivity, and learning are concerned. The links in the brain are not completed in a child until 5 or 6 years of age, and they take one more year to mature. So for example, when a child is not able to read or write at a younger age, they rely more on visual material to establish communication. So color is an important tool of expression for younger primary children. Scientific studies demonstrate that colors affect not only the outer layer of our brain, but the entire central nervous system. When the color is transmitted from the eye to the brain releases a hormone affecting our emotions, mind clarity, and energy levels. So for an example, using intense red color in a room of an anxious child or dressing them in red clothes or giving them a red rucksack should make him or her even more restless and tense. So here's some examples. On the left, you'll see a room in which the floor, ceiling, and walls are all red. When you look at that image, for many, you feel an increased heart rate, or maybe you feel a bit anxious or overwhelmed. An example of consideration of using red would be in a more kind of limited capacity, such as the face of the upper cabinets or lower cabinets, perhaps an area rug, or for example, some seating. So red in general is stimulation and excitement. It increases the heart rate and creates a sense of excitement. It does focus attention to detail. It can encourage learners to think outside the box and take risks. It stimulates appetite and it increases stress response, increases aggression and feeling overwhelmed. So with this in mind, possible considerations for the use of red in school design would be, for example, in a gymnasium where you want to encourage kind of that excitement, that kind of more risk-taking, quote unquote, aggression when you're playing a team sport. One would want to kind of limit the amount of red when you're kind of designing in spaces, particularly those that may be on a spectrum. For example, ADHD are on the spectrum, and whereby red would actually have a very kind of negative impact on those students. So very key select locations for red, furniture, toys, or maybe a highlighted feature wall would be kind of more appropriate consideration for the use of red. Orange is engagement, mental stimulation, and invigoration. So it increases oxygen supply to the brain, therefore stimulating mental activity and invigorating the senses. It's communicating energy, life, adventure, and activity. It loosens inhibitions, encourages social interaction, creative thinking, and is associated with fun. It encourages strength and confidence in learners. Many benefit exam takers when intense bursts of mental activity are required. So we're seeing more and more the use of orange integrated in what we'd call maybe a Da Vinci pod, so an art room area. In the example on the top left, you see that they've incorporated orange into the furniture solution in the chairs. They have one feature wall, and then they've lined their cubbies and have some of their toy storage in orange. So again, it can draw kids to a certain basket if they want. At younger ages, it's really good to introduce orange for primary school and daycare. Caution, orange has one of the widest varieties of hues and brighter oranges. And so therefore it can be considered overwhelming, and for students with ADHD or other on the spectrum, one has to be cautious on how much orange they utilize. So not large quantities, as it's a lot for the eye to process. Yellow is often uplifting, engagement, problem solving, and optimism. It's the first color to be processed by the eye. Therefore, the yellow elements in the room will draw the eye in. So again, on the far left, where it's a floor, wall, and ceiling, it may be a bit overwhelming or disoriented. But if you move to the far right, for example, with furniture solutions, they've lined the cubbies with yellow. So it's a good way to draw the students to different toys, especially, like I mentioned earlier, similar to orange. It enhances social interaction as well as creativity and problem solving. So again, we're seeing sometimes localized area rugs with yellow, or it could be used for wayfinding or a way to kind of move through a space. Green is the easiest color for the eye to process, making green the most restful color to the eye. Again, on the Pacific Northwest, we have the opportunity to kind of frame our views through windows and glazing and bringing in a lot of green into our interior environments, where you're looking over the prairies or other areas where you don't necessarily have nature to bring into the space. Green is a good color to kind of bring in for concentration and focus. So a lot of studies suggested that if you had to have a teaching wall, the best colors to use would either be green or blue. So where to use it in school design? Green along with blue is one of the colors that appears most widely in large quantities. It promotes calmness in the body, lowers heart rate, encourages longer term concentration and attention. Spaces such as classrooms, reading corners, libraries, and offices benefit from the use of green. Caution, avoid green using paired with red. These colors paired together is difficult for the eye to process because one is the quickest, easiest to process, and one is the most difficult to process. Therefore, it's not good to pair those two together. Lastly, blue is productivity, cognition, simplicity, and relaxation. It aids in calming, soothing, promoting a sense of safety and security. It boosts clarity and creative thinking, increases efficiency and comprehension with complicated subjects, and decreases distraction. So again, as I mentioned earlier, often when you're considering a teaching wall and want to draw the attention to the students and create the most optimal environment for kind of absorbing more detailed information, blue would be a good choice. Purple is creativity, imagination. So often you'll see it associated in a breakout space where you want smaller groups of kids to kind of collaborate together. You would use it in an art area often. We can skip over black, gray, and white. I guess the highlights though is that too much white, psychological and physiological effects. Devoid of color, white is easy to process. It's fresh, it's clean, it's bright. However, if it's too much, it'd be considered kind of clinical and cold. Gray can be calming, but however, too much gray can be considered gloomy and increase boredom. Black is subdued. It can inspire deep thinking and introspection, but too much black could also cause kind of depression and then shut off learning and stimulation. So again, bringing in color does not necessarily have to be paint on a wall, on the flooring, or in the ceiling. It could actually be introduced through the use of wood. We see more and more, especially with the Wood First Act, introducing wood into our schools in BC. So this is a way to actually not only reduce the heart rate, bring in warmth, make it comfortable, enhance the learning environment, and not actually have to introduce color through paint. Pattern is also an interesting consideration. Pattern reduces stress, it increases engagement, and can be considered pleasing to the eye. This is also drawn from biophilia because pattern is in nature, and that's what biophilia is trying to mimic nature. A study showed that incorporating fractals into architecture reduces stress. Another study showed that viewing fractals can reduce stress up to 60%. So again, the notion is to try to create a stress-free environment so that you're optimizing the brain's activity to absorb and engage. So I guess we'll put it out to the those that are kind of participating today if there was any questions or thoughts or comments for this first phase.
We have to stop sharing.
No questions?
Sarah, I just wondered about the impact of culture. I think you sort of briefly mentioned it, but things like if someone's gone through, difficult, kind of a difficult time, and they associate that with a color, that's kind of hard to differentiate from what we're kind of innately born with. I just wondered if you could comment briefly on the physiology versus culture, which is a stronger determinant.
Right. We did do quite a bit of research on that. And what was interesting was kind of regardless of where you were in the world, because of the physiological aspect and the fact that color is like a physics with the refraction of the light and where it's processed in the brain, that, not universally, but the overarching kind of response, regardless of where you were culturally, was the same. There are overtures depending on which culture you come from. We associate good luck from Asian cultures with red, and prosperity, but I think that overall within the academic setting, this certain colors, regardless of where you came from culturally, that didn't really impact how you performed from an academic point of view. It was actually the body's physiological, the release of cortisol within the brain and how that either could assist and facilitate learning or how it would be a deterrent to learning was actually the physiological response, not the cultural response.
Right. There's three questions here, actually. The first, The question is, does texture and color get studied together? And if so, how does texture affect how we perceive certain colors?
That's a good question. In some of the comments with respect to biophilia and pattern and wood, it showed that when you could kind of try to mimic nature, which obviously is three-dimensional, that encouraged learning, especially in, again, the younger age groups where they can't necessarily read and write and their level of communication is different than obviously higher education or high school. So texture was really important at the younger ages. That's why often you'll even texture and also creating different three-dimensional spaces. So that's where Reggio Emilia comes into play, where you may create, use higher top tables and chairs, because that kind of simulates you're on top of a mountain, or then you might have kind of an area rug where you're sitting down low, close to earth. And so kind of trying to create texture through and pattern through maybe carpets, furniture, that did show that it stimulated and assisted the younger age groups. Then texture, obviously, if it is three-dimensional, it could, you could get variations in shadow, which would impact your color. But I think basically the more texture you have, the less saturated the color, therefore the easier it is to process.
Okay. Thank you. There's a question from, I believe it's Ron Hoffert. What is the source of the color characteristics? For example, red equals activity, green equals restful.
Oh, this came from I have a bibliography. So this came from I have a whole list of all the different articles and the articles and the different papers that were the research papers that we referenced in here. So it's a comprehensive bibliography for all this information. It wasn't from any one specific source.
Right. There's a question from, I believe it's from Greg Brown. If color appreciation is based on brain science, why are there such disparities in what colors people are drawn to?
Well, I think part of that becomes conditioned through society. So I think if you just took younger kids, like preschool kids, so ages, zero up to four or five, where they haven't necessarily had a lot of kind of society's influence, you'll see that they will gravitate towards kind of universal colors, like primary colors, like the yellow, the oranges, the greens and blues, because that's what's in nature and that's what we kind of all understand. And then because it stimulates different aspects of the brain. But then I think as we get older and mature through cultural influences, we may then be drawn from a personal level towards certain colors, but it definitely impacts everyone's brain and the way they process it in their eye the same way.
Excellent. Thank you. I think that's it for the questions.
Okay. Color for the ages. So again, this was based on quite a bit of research.
I don't think the presentation's come up again.
Oh, sorry. I have to screen share again. my apologies. Okay.
Perfect. Thank you.
So color preference for different ages. Most children do not prefer black. Well, again, the research has suggested that most children do not prefer black, white, gray, or brown. There's a strong preference from ages 5 to 8 for red, oranges, yellow, and violet. From 9 to 10 was, again, well, red. So the younger the age group, it seemed like the warmer the colors. And then as you moved into high school and then higher education, they gravitated towards the blues and the greens and the cooler colors. So 9 and 10 was a preference for red, orange, yellow, and green, blue. 11 and 12 was green and yellow. And then 13 to 17 was blue, green, ultramarine, and orange. Primary school learners work well in bright and warm colors like red, yellow, and orange and pink. Children tolerate and process warmer colors better than in larger quantities than older students. They can be more engaging for them. Consider all types of activities with younger versus older students. Younger students engage in more playtime and activities that cater to their shorter attention spans, and older students will spend more time stationary at the desk. So if you recall earlier with the teaching wall and the more specific concentration was the green and the blue, whereas with the younger students, because they have a shorter attention span, that's why you want the kind of more intense stimulation with the yellows and oranges. Pattern texture for ages, tactile learning. Younger kids learn more with touch, squishy things, and touching things. And then as you kind of age in older primary school learners, they typically consider primary colors to be immature and prefer cooler colors and more subdued hues. So again, this is now where you start to possibly culture may impact, but also just, you know, you start to want to differentiate when you hit grade 5 or 6 that you're kind of a senior elementary school student versus the grade 1s, 2, and 3. So they don't want to be associated with those primary colors like the yellow Tonka truck, but they want to now be kind of cooler colors. They seem to work better in tints and pastel shades of color. Warmer and brighter accent colors are great to add attention to detail and energy, particularly in more active spaces such as common areas or gymnasia, gathering spaces and seating, or an architectural feature such as a stair or a seating nook. High school students. Adolescents relate better to cooler colors, which relax and focus the learners' concentration. Subtle and cooler colors are better for middle and high school students where concentration is a priority. Cooler colors are also better at relieving anxiety, which can be common among this age group. And then lastly, higher education students. A study of 98 higher education students asked to indicate their emotional response. So this is different now once you start to get into emotional versus the physiological response to 5 principal hues: red, yellow, green, blue, and purple. 5 intermediate hues. The principal hues comprise of the highest number of positive emotional responses, followed by intermediate, then achromatic. Green evoked mainly positive response such as relaxation and comfort because it reminded them of nature. Green, yellow showed the least positive response as it was associated with vomit or feeling sick. And then white elicited the most positive response of achromatic colors, followed by black and gray. So now the use of color in autism spectrum. So this is Anarika had designed a facility in Richmond. So she's gonna speak to these few next slides.
So thank you. So obviously we're kind of sometimes painting in broad strokes here in the use of color, but when we're designing learning environments, we have to be mindful that there's all kinds of different learners, and we may have children that are very hyperactive, or we may have children with learning disabilities, or even students that are on the autism spectrum disorder. So some of the important things to keep in mind when you design spaces that may be used by a broad range of students, or very specific spaces that may be used by a specific group of these learners, is that for the autism spectrum disorder especially, that there is actually a physiological response in the eye structure, so that these children perceive colors more intensely in comparison to other children. So that's very important to know, that you don't use the very deep hues and maybe go more to pastel-y colors or duller colors with white and gray undertones. Cool colors are more calming, and you have to be very careful with using reds and oranges. When it comes to children with learning disabilities, however, introducing some yellows or oranges or purples can actually improve the energy levels and attention span of those children. And then when you're talking about children that may are on the ADHD spectrum, hyperactive children, you have to actually be very careful of using large quantities of white, as they may cause a lot more anxiety. Red is a high energy color that may cause a lot of high blood pressure. and the use of natural colors can actually be very efficient. So, and again, the shades of blue and the cooler colors, cooler tones may be great. So these are things to keep in mind, whether different students are sharing a space or whether spaces are custom designed. So these are some pictures from a facility I worked on while working at HCME. And this is a learning center for the school district in Richmond, which was for children on the spectrum. And it's built a renovation of an underused wing of an existing elementary school. And as you can see here, we work very closely with staff and occupational therapists on the design and picking of colors. And some of the things that were very important were to avoid overstimulation of the students. So we really avoided the use of reds, yellows, and oranges. We did try to use a lot of calming use, such as shades of greens and blues. We tried to introduce some nature by using a vinyl plank floor with a wood grain. And bringing in daylight without having the overstimulation through the views of the windows was also very important. So here's where some of those natural elements that Sarah was talking about were coming in. So we introduced these skylights to bring natural daylight into the space without having the distraction of everything that's going on outside, since this was on the side of an existing school. So there was a lot of other kids coming and going and being dropped off. And then last but not least, to kind of avoid patterns. So both patterns in the interior as well as shadow patterns. So we used some film on the windows, but very sparingly, because even the light filtering through through windows and throwing a lot of different patterns can throw these kids off. So this is one of the examples of how color pattern and natural tones can aid in creating an environment that can help students in their learning.
Another anecdotal story, I was doing some research and it was talking about for furniture solution and children on the spectrum. If you see on the far right there, those big beanbag poofs, they're a good strategy in that if a child like who has ADHD is feeling overwhelmed and they kind of need to check out, they can sink inside the poofs and it kind of creates a cocoon type environment, which allows them an opportunity to kind of disconnect if they're feeling overwhelmed. So furniture solution is also something to be considered. So I guess that's another natural pause. If there's any questions.
Thanks, Sarah. There was one question about whether this presentation was going to be available, and we are recording it and we're looking at ways of providing it either to our membership through maybe a link or perhaps on the website. So we're looking at those options.
Great, thanks, Carrie. Okay, moving along. So what are we seeing currently in BC schools? So I'm sure there are several architects and engineers who may have been involved in these different projects that you'll see on the screen here, but I just wanted to compliment everyone and draw attention to some of how we're seeing color introduced into our schools in BC. So you'll see there's extensive use of wood. So, you know, wood is a natural, has a biophilia aspect to it. It's a, you know, it's a strategic way to bring in color without actually, like I said, having to apply a paint or flooring. There's some accent walls, the use of pattern. So whether it's a circular window or a circle in your floor, so that again also helps with stimulating, especially in kind of more environments like a breakout area in a corridor or a pod or what have you. Bright environments, so you'll see that a lot of them are very bright with natural light and use of color on floors and walls. Again, extensive use of wood, pops of yellow, heavy timber circles seems to be quite prominent. And then here are some examples of some Reggio Emilia schools. So the building is the third teacher, a strong connection to nature, extensive use of natural materials and finishes, extensive use of natural light and natural ventilation, and interiors geared toward more explorational learning. So again, you'll see simple geometric forms, whether it's circles, rectangles, squares, a lot of natural wood, connection to the outdoors. And you'll notice a lot of introducing area rugs that are in a circular pattern. It's a very effective way to kind of create these micro spaces within your overall classroom without having to commit to it in resilient floor, for example. So color for wayfinding and furniture selection. This is one of Alvin's projects. So he'll just kind of speak to this project.
Hi, everybody. This is Crosstown Elementary School, which is in downtown Vancouver, which is a four-story school right up against a bunch of existing condo buildings. And when we started off with the color here, I realize now we probably could have done an awful lot more research based on this presentation. But our notion here was to create, as you see, it's quite white. These photos were taken before the school moved in, of course. All the walls and the ceilings were to be white in order for the students and the staff to animate the walls themselves with all the color that they end up putting on there. And we've seen photos of such that's happened after the fact. And then one of the main criteria here was for wayfinding, and we did simple things where each of the classrooms is we use pastel colors throughout as well, which you'll see, but all the classrooms have the same green, light green floor or pale green floor. All of the corridors have a light blue shade to them, and all of the multi-purpose rooms have a light gray shade. And then in the middle of the whole school is this central staircase that goes up through a four-story atrium, where we painted the underside of the stairway in that yellow ribbon that you see, and all of the guardrails yellow. Which leads you through a very clear understanding of where you're going through the school, leads you all the way through the heart of the school up to the different floors. All the stairs got the darker blue treatment as well, so that it's highlighted in greater color for you. The furniture itself came after the fact. The school district purchased all of that on their own through a little bit of consultation with us with the different colors we were introducing. But they, as you can see in the library space down below with that central or circular carpet that Sarah was just talking about at another school, and the use of color for all their beanbag chairs. I believe that they've got separate colors for the library and for the kindergarten, and I believe for the multi-purpose room as well. So it was definitely in the forefront of their thinking as well.
And then another thing just to note is trying to be strategic in where to place wood. So for example, you notice that the cap on the guardrail, the drywall guardrails, the furniture is all a nice light blonde wood. And so again, making it appropriate to the scale of the end user. So, that way the students could actually kind of touch the cap rail or touch the furniture, which also, again, as earlier studies suggest, the use of wood really helps to reduce down stress and lower the heart rate. Again, any more questions? Okay, lastly, I think we're near the end, but we shape our buildings and afterwards our buildings shape us. So this was Winston Churchill. So the poll questions, has today's information on color theory changed any of your answers from the earlier poll questions? Quite a bit, somewhat, neutral, not very much, or not at all. So now we just wanted to open it up and have a kind of round table discussion.
Carla, is it possible to get the answers to the five poll questions?
Yeah, let me actually see if I could share the results of each of them. Can you see them?
Yes.
Okay.
So it looks like most folks thought that the color that draws the attention of kindergartens is green. And Sarah, what color would you suggest it would be?
Well, the research was suggesting it was orange or yellow.
Right. So the next question. Do the impacts of color change as you age? And overwhelmingly, 80% said yes. And Sarah, what does the research say?
Yes. So 80% are right.
The next question is, what color do you associate with high levels of activity? And 32% said red, 16% orange, 26% yellow, 16% green, and 11% blue. Nobody thought purple or other. And Sarah, what does the research say?
Yes, red. So because it increases your blood pressure, it increases stimulation, blood flow. So I think earlier it was noted that often you'll see a lot of high school team sports will have some color of red in it. Often you'll see kind of, you know, the bags that wrap around columns and what have you are in red. So red is definitely associated with high levels of activity.
What color do you associate with creativity? And nobody said red, 5% said orange, 15% yellow, 50% said green, 20% blue, 5% purple. Sarah, what does the research say?
Orange and purple were most associated with creativity.
Interesting.
More and more you'll see, like I mentioned earlier, those kind of Da Vinci pods or little breakout areas where you'll have a sink and what have you, an art area in elementary school. They're often kind of integrating oranges or maybe yellows, which is supposed to stimulation and creativity. It also encourages thinking outside the box.
Cool.
I think there was one more, right?
Yeah, I think it was the final one, right? Has today's information on color theory changed any of your answers from earlier questions? 61% said somewhat, 22% said neutral, and 13% said not very much. 4% said quite a bit. I'm wondering if some people were surprised by the last four questions too. So I think at this point we'll open the questions up. Our A4LE host is saying that if you raise your hand, they can enable your mic to be unmuted so that you can ask your question. Okay, Patrick Stewart. Oh, okay. He's leaving early, so it's not actually a question.
So it doesn't appear that anyone has raised their hand.
Okay. Trying to think of our discussion the other day, Sarah, what are the things we had talked about with regard to color? It is really quite a fascinating subject. Six. So Devin Ross just says, fascinating presentation, great summary of the best practice educational research and best practice facilities research with respect to colors, textures, and patterns. So good. Thank you very much, you guys. You did a great job. Sarah, Alvin, and Enrique.
Do you want me to bring up the last slides, Carrie?
Sure, that would be good.
Okay.
Sharing the screen.
No, I need to share the screen, yeah. Can you see that?
Yes. So, now that we're, thank you very much, Studio Hub, for your fantastic presentation. I'm sure there's a lot for folks to consider here.
So there was one question from Devin, actually added a question. He said, based on all of your learning, how would you ideally design a grade 7 classroom with respect to color?
Oh, good question. I'd probably, if I was to have a teaching wall as a focal point, I would use kind of greens or blues for the, as you're getting into grade 7, you're kind of getting into needing to be a bit more focus-based study and learning and absorption of kind of information being presented. So a green or blue, again, the grade 7 students want to differentiate themselves from the earlier primary school kids, which are associated with the yellows and oranges. I'd probably look to introduce possibly some pops of color through more furniture solutions. So the use of the back of the chair or the caster wheels, resiliency and flexibility. So again, maybe bringing in some wood through if there's any mobile storage units or anything like that, maybe bring in wood there, natural light, definitely. And trying to have a relatively neutral kind of floor pattern.
So then also Suzanne sent a message in chat or a question in chat. She said, wondering, as there are conflicting best colors for different situations and ages, are you using a UDL framework? And what would that look like?
Can she elaborate on the question? Like when she means conflicting, do you mean like children on the spectrum or age groups or?
So let's see, I can enable her microphone real quick. Hopefully you're okay with that, Suzanne. Putting her on the.
There. Can you hear me?
We can hear you, yes.
Oh, there we go, great, thank you. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking about, right? In a classroom, you have sometimes students with, you know, different neurodiversities, different grades. You know, you're talking about, and I appreciate that, you know, certain colors stimulate and certain colors calm and for different age groups. But I work for UBC teaching in a rural teacher education program. So we're looking at schools with, you know, maybe 50 kids, K to 12, multi-aged classes, inclusive ed practices. So all students are integrated into the classrooms in the schools. Mm-hmm. So would you have like that idea then of, you know, the complexity of the situation from a universal design framework, would there be, what will be the commonalities or things that probably would be considerations first? And my first thing comes, it sounds like, you know, like natural materials would be number one and having wood products in it. Would there be the, any other components that you would say would be your go-to pieces to start from?
Yeah, I guess one, I'll add one comment and then Anarika has some thoughts as well. Because you have a larger kind of age group framework, I would probably lean towards relying more on elements that you could add into a space and remove from a space as opposed to kind of really you know, fixing it. Like often you'll see in some classrooms, they may have resilient flooring and then they might carve out an area with carpet tile because that's where the little kids might sit down and do story time or what have you. I would probably kind of move away from actually fixing it into hard surfaces and then consider something that you could add in, like you could add in the area rug like Alvin had in the library, which you then use as all the grade threes go over to this kind of area on the area rug, the purple rug or what have you, and now we're going to do this kind of lesson. And then again, introducing more age appropriate, depending on whether it's like the type of table or chair or what have you, which could also then appeal to the different kind of whether or not they're more much older students versus younger students. So that would be kind of one way I try to integrate, you know, kind of more universal principles into the space. And then Enrique had some thoughts as well.
Yeah, I think it's important if you have all the different students in the classroom to really shy away, like do not use anything that could trigger or overstimulate a particular student. So like Sarah said, it's good to use things that you can take away or add to space in terms of furniture, but really stay away from the reds and the oranges in particular, because the detrimental effect on maybe one or two students could be larger than the benefit to the group in this case. And really relying on the biophilia, the wood, maybe the light greens and the blues really try to not create a space that would feel overstimulating or unsafe for a particular group of students.
Another strategy could be to look at all opportunities for teaching environments. So not just what you would typically think as the classroom, but maybe repurpose a portion of the corridor and use the corridor space as a breakout space. And maybe that's geared towards the higher age group, like the grade 12 students. So maybe remove some lockers, free up some area, create a different environment within the corridor. Maybe you drop down and use half height lockers and put a countertop, and maybe there's a different color kind of over there that would kind of be an area where more senior students could go and do a breakout kind of space or something like that.
Thank you.
Is there any other questions?
There's a comment here from Megan Scott, just saying, I really find this information fascinating. Thanks so much. Loved seeing all the work done all over the Lower Mainland as well.
Thanks.
So if there aren't any more questions, perhaps we'll move on to upcoming sessions. So our next session is April 1st, no fooling around here. We're having a virtual tour of Douglas Elementary with some lessons learned. And we're also planning to have a social networking event. So we'll, the idea is to start with a little bit of social networking, get into the presentation, and then finish off with some social networking as well. And we'll be using a slightly different program than Zoom. It's called AirMeet, and we're excited about trying something new. Then on May 6th, we're looking at having a double header. And this would be a Ministry of Education update, basically what's new in the zoo or who's new in the zoo. They've had quite a few changes in their staffing, also what their priorities are in terms of the Wood First Act, heavy timber and energy targets, that sort of thing. And then also the second half would be a seismic tutorial case study of Montgomery Middle School in Coquitlam. And the RJC engineers and the school district 43 have come together to describe in easy language the work involved in a complex seismic upgrade from technical and education programming perspective. So that sounds like it's going to be pretty amazing presentation as well. So we've come pretty much to the end of our time, I guess, unless anybody else has any more comments or questions. Sarah, if you would advance one more. So I wanted to thank you all for joining us and for your thoughtful questions and comments. A lot of great ideas shared today, and a big thank you to Studio Hub, Sarah, Enrique, and Alvin for presenting today. And thanks again to all of our sponsors. Without you, it's very difficult for us to continue and do this work where we're sharing good information. And also, I wanted to mention that I wanted to give a note about the Pacific Northwest conferences. The one that was supposed to be in Portland, I think it was last year, and Vancouver was supposed to be this year, both have been postponed. So the Pacific Northwest Conference in Portland is scheduled for the end of April 2022. And the Vancouver conference will be combined with the Alaska conference, and it will be in the spring of 2023. So if we have no further comments or questions, I just want to thank you all for your time. Stay safe, stay kind, and stay calm.